If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking with Andrew Gerza, a disability awareness consultant and crippled content creator. He's also the host of Disability After Dark, the show that shines a bright light on sex and disability. In his work, he seeks to explore how the lived experience of disability feels as it interplays with intersectional communities. And he's just a fucking awesome guy.
Yeah, I loved this interview. It's awesome. Yeah. Really, really enjoyed speaking with them. Yeah. Also, you wanted to say something?
No, I was just going to say that I first was introduced to his podcast maybe a year ago or so. Mm-hmm. And it's only been around for about a year and a half. About a year ago. And I thought, man, that's a cool show. I need to get him on our show. And so we finally did.
Yeah.
So yay, I'm glad that we finally had Andrew on our show today.
Yes. And, Dedeker is gone? I don't know. She's not here this week. So yes. It's just the two of us with Andrew as our third co-host this week.
Yeah. So Dedeker, watch out. Your job may be replaced.
Exactly.
We have a new third host.
New sheriff in town. With that.
Yeah. Anyway, in this episode, we get into all sorts of great stuff, kind of from some basics mm-hmm. to things that are a little more in depth than that. I feel like it was a really valuable episode for me personally.
Oh, me too.
And I hope that it is for all of you as well, because this is something that we haven't talked about on our show at all before mm-hmm. about both sex and also just relationships and dating with disabilities.
Yeah.
So with that, let's get to the interview.
So welcome, Andrew, to the podcast. Thank you so much for being on. I just wanted to start out with your specific podcast, Disability After Dark, is really awesome and amazingly candid and really open. I just wanted to ask for our listeners out there who haven't potentially listened to your podcast yet, what is the message of it? Like, what type of information are you hoping that your listeners will get from listening to your podcast?
The message is shining a bright light on sex and disability. That's really, really all it is. And it started out, I started it a year and a half ago, really wanting to go deeper into sex and disability. That's kind of morphed into just talking about sexuality generally with a loose link to disability, because the more and more I do it and the more and more I talk to people about sexuality and disability, it has grown so much in a way that isn't just about the physical act of sex or even the emotional act of sex. So, I mean, there's so much more to it. Like, next week there'll be an episode, or by the time this airs, it'll be out, but there'll be an episode about me and drag, and like, there's stuff around identity.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's so much bigger than I thought it was going to be. So the message is just like, let's have a really frank conversation about sexuality generally, identity, gender, ability, disability, all those things are part of it now. So the message has really grown to just, let's talk about sexuality as it is with relation to disability.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to kind of skip ahead a little bit here, but you have an After Dark in your title of your podcast. So like, we, for example, tend to talk a little bit more about relationships, and you obviously are talking a lot about sex. And did you feel like there was something missing, like, out in the grand land of podcasts out there, that like, you really felt like you wanted to have sex be a big part of your podcast specifically?
I'm just a sexual person, and I wanted to talk about that. And I had been blogging for HuffPost and for other outlets and for The Advocate and Mashable and all those things. And when you're disabled, sometimes typing is not the easiest sometimes, and I get tired easily when I type a lot. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'll just podcast and see if that translates. And, you know, at the time, like a year and a half ago, that was, you know, what people were doing. And that was kind of the cool new thing. Not even, well, before then. But yeah. It's been a thing for a couple of years now. So I was like, well, I looked around. And there were so few podcasts talking about sex and disability. And I was like, I already have this market that I'm growing. Why don't I just turn it into a podcast and see what happens? And this is where we are.
Awesome. Yeah. So on your website, like one of the things that you say is that your goal as a disability awareness consultant is to bring the experience of disability to you in a way that is open, fun, and above all else, accessible. And so yeah. What we wanted to do on this episode was to cover kind of some of that, like we call it a 101. We've actually recently had a number of 101 style episodes about like relationship anarchy 101, polyamory 101. So we'd love to cover some of that and then hopefully also get into a little like deeper questions as well as we go through that.
Yeah, sure. First, I'll say I'm happy to, I love 101s, but that's so much of what I do in my job. I think we need to get to a place where we stop asking disabled people, like, how do you have sex? Oh my God, you have sex? Like, wow, let's be shocked by that. We need to get to a place where the shock and awe of the fact that somebody who has disabilities would want to be sexual goes away. And it's not brave to be sexual and disabled. It's not inspiring to be sexual and disabled. It just is part of what it is. So when I do one-on-ones, I try to talk about like the deeper stuff, and I try to bring people into my experience because we think we know what disability is, but we don't know how it feels. We often don't know how it feels, and I do because I live it every day, and so do so many other people. But also with my podcast, I don't know how some invisible disabilities feel. I don't know how some mental illness, chronic illnesses feel. I don't know how all that feels. So when I invite a guest on, half the time I'm just listening, being like, wow, I didn't think about this. Like, wow, thanks for... So when I give a lecture, I am giving them 101, but I'm showing them that there's more to it than how does Andrew have sex? Like, if you want to know how to fuck me, come over and if we click
them. Try like, it sometime.
And you give them 101.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's awesome. I love that you talked about disabilities or things that people can't see right in front of them, but that may also be prevalent and that should be talked about as well and thought about as well. That's really awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, that's something that even my own privilege didn't allow me to see until I had other disabled people with invisible disabilities come up to me and say, well, you're not really doing it. Like, you haven't spoken about our experience a lot. What are you going to do to fix that? And at first I was like, oh, wow, I didn't even realize. I'm just like, okay, like, all right. And then the more and more I talk to individuals with multiple levels of disability, you notice that, like, they need a space to talk. So when I'm talking to an individual with invisible disabilities, I'll say, like, okay, I'm super ignorant about this. Show me this. And so I think as a wheelchair user too, because I'm a wheelchair user, you unintentionally feel like, oh, my wheelchair is the only way to be disabled. And that's just not true. And so by listening to these other voices, I'm becoming so much more intersectional just by shutting up and listening and letting them tell me, like, hey, I'm a person with an invisible disability and I like sex this way or I like to do this. And it's so eye-opening for me, which is why, like, I love doing episodes where I'm talking about my own experience. But when I have a guest where I can just sit and go, wow, okay, like, tell me more about this, like, and let them, it, and I know that the audience is going to be hearing that going, okay, maybe my experience is here. Maybe like I'm represented too. It's so nice to know that it isn't just a white guy in a wheelchair talking about how hard it is being a white guy in a wheelchair. Trying to have sex.
Yeah. So something that I think especially over the past year, but even before that, doing our show, that we'll get feedback from our listeners kind of calling us out on things that either we haven't done a good job of representing or certain things that we say.
Dead wrong, yeah.
Right, like language that we use that we had no idea, even, you know, despite our best efforts to be inclusive. You know, like a simple example of this is we had an episode where we were talking about labels and how it's difficult when the world kind of puts labels on polyamorous relationships because sometimes that doesn't always fit. But that in our conversation about it, we referred to women that we've dated as girls that we've dated. And someone called us out on it being like, hey, actually, like calling women girls is infantilizing and is, you know, not a great thing to do. And we were just like, geez, you're right. We've done that for a long time now. So we've worked hard together to change our language around that. More recently, it's been things like crazy, like saying like, gosh, this is crazy good, or man, it's just been crazy lately. People pointing out like, hey, actually, that's kind of ableist against people who are actually called crazy because of a mental disability that they have. So in the spirit of that, I was wondering if we could kind of start out this sort of 101 course with a little bit of that. Like, what are some things that are not okay to say? And language-wise, and sort of what are things that are okay?
That's a loaded question because my moniker is Queer Cripple, so I go against what is politically correct and what's not politically correct to say. I'm very outspoken about the language I use to describe myself. Mm-hmm. I think when you're dealing with another disabled person, you, just much like how we're doing with the non-binary and trans communities right now, where we're asking, hey, what are your pronouns? We need to adopt the same idea around disability identity and say like, hey, I see you have a disability, or I noticed you mentioned you have a non-visible disability. How would you like me to refer to you, to you and to that, and let them tell you what they decide? Because if you ask me what my preferred term is, I'll tell you queer cripple. That's what you should call me. And especially if you're somebody that I'm fucking, that's what I prefer to be referred to as. So that's what I'll say. Like, but I think language needs to move away from person first identity. So like, person with a disability is the correct, quote unquote, correct term. I think we need to look at preferred language. So if somebody says, I'm handicapable, as much as that makes me cringe, if they told me that was their preferred moniker, I would have to respect it because that's what they asked me to call them as. So, but I think we have to start like asking disabled people, what do you want to be called? Like, what do you prefer? And it gives us the agency to say, actually, you can call me fucking cripple fucker. That's what I like. It gives us the agency to decide what we want to be called, period. Right. So does that answer the question sort of?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's interesting because I think it's a difficult question because, like, for example, on your show where you refer to yourself as a queer cripple and you refer to like your crip cock and things like that.
I love that so much.
And
things I don't remember saying, but I'm sure.
Oh my god! No, yeah, you're just cracking up.
Stuff like that where like I don't know if that's something that you would want me to call you, or if that's only something, you know, for you
if
to say about yourself.
If we were making out and we were in having sexy times together, yeah, I would probably be okay with that. And I've asked partners who I'm sleeping with to like playfully, if they wanted to, call me that or give me a nickname that incorporates disability, because it forces them to see it for what it is. And it proves to me that you're comfortable. If you spend the whole time we're together tiptoeing around like, oh my god, how do I handle this? Whereas if you just laugh with me and call me a cripple and we laugh together and I've given you permission to do that, like, don't, I'm not saying go up to a disabled person on the street and be like, hey cripple, what's up? Like, that's not, no.
But right,
if we're messing around or we're friends and we're hanging out and I say to you, please call me cripple because it allows for you to see me, that's a big deal. It's a badge of honor that you should be like, wow, Andrew, like, let me into this part of his identity. Especially if we're having sexy moments together, then I would hope you're comfortable enough to make those jokes with me. Because, and I mean, the discomfort around the humor, sometimes I don't want to make jokes about it, but I feel like if I don't, what if the other person doesn't ever relax? Like, I use it as a testing mechanism to see, like, where is this other person going to be okay with things? I'm not sure, so.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, and it's interesting you bring that up too, because in your episode about your Huffington Post article, the four things that you should never say to a queer cripple before, during, or after sex, that you said actually there was a lot of backlash against using the word cripple in that, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. Every time, whenever I post an article and use the word cripple, before even reading the article, somebody will be like, well, you shouldn't use that word, it's demeaning. And I'm like, well, did you read what like the rest of the 2,000 word article said about the thing I was writing about? Like, did you read what I said? And so, like, that article, the editor of HuffPost at the time had to step in and be like, whoa, we're gonna let him use the language he wants to. Don't, like, take a breath. But it's mostly able-bodied people running to my defense of like, oh my God, how could you say that? It's so derogatory. I mean, yes, it was, and yes, it is in certain contexts, but I've taken it back for myself. And again, if I don't know you and you walk up to me on the street and start yelling cripple, I'm going to probably not like that. But if I know you and we're friends, I've said to you like, hey, maybe after we have sex this morning, you could call me this, or maybe during the sex, you could call me this. Like, then it... Like I said, it's a form of reclamation for me. Actually, like, next week, I'm getting a tattoo of the words queer cripple on my chest.
Because that's cool.
It's such an important terminology for me, and it's how I made my job. It's what I've done. It's how I built my name around those terms. And I've said, I don't fucking care what you think about me. I'm going to put these two, once horribly derogatory terms, on my body and say, this is now my power. This is my power language. I'm owning it. And if you want to, like, get on this ride with me, you should probably know that that's how I refer to myself.
Yeah.
On that note, can you tell us what the four things that you should never say to a queer cripple before, during, or after sex are?
Or give us enough of a preview so people can learn something, but then they can go listen to your episode to get the rest of it.
I should probably pull that. I haven't looked at that in a while. All right. So the four things you should never ask a queer cripple before, during, or after sex are, please, please don't tell me that taking care of me isn't that hard. If before, during, or after the sex, you have to move my body or help me out in some way with respect to disability, please don't tell me that it was so nice taking care of you, or it was so easy. Please don't do that. It's super infantilizing. And it will make me not want to ever have sexy times with you ever again. It's super weird. And I don't appreciate being infantilized right after I did a thing with you, or during the thing, or before the thing. The next thing is, please don't ask me during sex if I can get it up. It's super uncomfortable, and if you ask me just as you're about to go down on me if I can get it up, then I'm never going to be able to get it up. And also,
that was my thought when you said that. I was just like, Jesus, if someone asked me that, like, I'm definitely not getting it up then.
Exactly.
Yeah. And also, as a disabled person, you might be dealing with erectile dysfunction problems. You might have medications that require that you can't get an erection fully, like somebody who doesn't deal with all that stuff. So asking that question is full of ableist stuff that we have to stop doing. And I think the trouble, especially in my experience as a queer man, a queer cisgendered man who has only currently spent time with other cisgendered men, the idea of being erect is like how we view arousal, which is just so, like, backwards and a little bit archaic. Like, can we...
It's very narrow, move, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying I don't enjoy an erect penis every now and then, but I do feel like it's just so... Why would you ask somebody that ever? Because it would... Then they would get in their heads. I mean, even if you weren't disabled and you asked your partner, like, hey, can you get it up right now?
I'd be like, yeah, let me just do that not for anymore. You.
Yeah. So, I mean, then after that one, the next thing you should never do is... You know... You should never ask somebody, if I were you, you'd never say to a disabled person before, during, or after sex, if I were you, I would kill myself. I had a partner once. We didn't even actually end up having sex. We were just kind of flirting with the idea, and he was helping me get ready to, he was one of my attendant care workers, and we were kind of like playing with the idea, maybe fooling around after we had stopped working for each other. And he was like, you know, if I were you, I'd kill myself. It's so powerful that you just live every day and you're alive. And I was like, what? I was like, I don't know
it's
how.
Mind-blowing. Jeez.
Like, I'm never going to want to spend time with you again. And he said it with such genuine, like, feeling of, like, he didn't even realize what he was saying was weird and uncomfortable. And I remember being with him and just being like, I don't. And he was also my care worker at the time, so I had to deal with him for after that. And I just got quiet. I didn't say anything. I didn't say, because what do you say when someone's like, if I were you, I'd be dead.
Yeah.
Like, thank you? What do you say?
I have no idea.
And then one of the most interesting moments that I've ever had with a lover ever in my whole life. I met this guy on an app a couple years ago, and we were going to mess around. And he came over to my place, and we were messing around. And we're making out really pretty passionately. We're going to get down to the heavy stuff soon. And we're doing it, and he stops. He goes, I have to stop. And I was like, okay, like, what's going on? What's happening? And he was like, you kind of remind me of my ex-girlfriend's dead disabled son.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And I was like, what? And he was like, well, yeah, he was a kid, and he passed away, and he was in a wheelchair too. And I was like, cool, but and I just didn't know. I honestly was like flabbergasted.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to do. So I asked him to leave, because I was like, I can't get into this now. Like, what? So, but I think telling somebody that they remind you, like telling a disabled person during the throes of sex that they remind you of this other disabled person, even if it isn't as creepy as that, you remind me of my ex-girlfriend's dead disabled kid, you probably shouldn't, like, you should be spending time with the person you're with and not comparing, like, well, this one time when I was with this other disabled person, this happened. Like, no, if we're doing this, like, don't, like, I think people need to realize that when you're hanging out with, and go back to the 101 part of this thing, when you're hanging out with a disabled person, especially for the first time, especially when you're both vulnerable and naked and you might be having some sex, you're going to say something ableist. It's going to happen. You're going to say something inappropriate. You're going to do something wrong, and that's okay. I think what disabled people need to realize too is that if you're fucking a non-disabled person, they're going to say something stupid. They're going to say something inappropriate. They're going to, as I used to say, I don't say it much anymore, but I'll bring it back for this. They're going to, instead of putting their foot in their mouth, they're going to swallow their leg. They're going to say something really inappropriate. They're going to, and they won't mean it. They won't have no idea how inappropriate it is. And you have two choices. If you don't like the person, you go ahead and like give them a, oh my God, I can't believe you. Why would, but if you want to, you know, really spend time with the person, you have the opportunity, not the obligation. I want to make that clear. Not the obligation, the opportunity to say like, hey, so that thing you did just there was kind of weird for me, and here's why. And you can lay out like, I felt like this and blah, blah. And again, you don't have to if you don't have the energy or the desire or the want, especially if you, sometimes you just want to fuck, you don't really want to spend time dealing with their ableism. But if you like the person and can see something continuing, you can say like, actually, maybe don't do this again. But I think as an able-bodied person, if you're going to hook up with another disabled person, you can be sure you're going to say something really inappropriate. And it's not that it's, I mean, we all, it's so complicated because it's not okay, but it is okay because you should learn from it and move on and try not to do it again. But you're going to stumble because disability is something that's still so taboo and still so new and still so like, oh, wow. And like most people have never been with a disabled person sexually. And so they don't know how to act. They don't know how to be. They don't know what's appropriate. And so it's okay. And it's also okay to be a non-disabled person. I think, in my opinion, it's okay to be a non-disabled person and come into those situations and be like, okay, so I think you're really hot, but I have no fucking clue what I'm doing. Before I go down on you, how about we have a discussion about that? Or just be aware that I'm going to do something probably weird and just be ready for that. And that's okay. And let's, like, there's something kind of endearing to have somebody be like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I've never done this before, but I think you're kind of hot and I'd like to get you out of your wheelchair and fuck around with you. Like, there's something really adorable about that, and more people would just do that as opposed to trying to be really politically correct. I think the trouble with especially disability, is we've been taught never to say something wrong. We've been taught to walk on eggshells around disabled people all the time, and that's a nice idea, but when you're about to, like, suck somebody off or give them a head or get naked with them, you're vulnerable, so you're gonna stumble, and that's okay. I have done really crappy, weird things too, and been like, oh, I never realized, so sorry, but, like, you can just move on, and you just don't try not to do it again.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really... I'm thinking about it too, because that reminds me a lot of things we've talked about on other episodes for, you know, any kind of, I guess, minority, for lack of a better word, but whether it's because you're polyamorous or because you're a certain race or you're from a certain country, there is that thing of, like, people are probably going to fuck up. Like, I've had people say some pretty offensive things about polyamory to me, with the best of intentions, with being like, yeah, super fascinated, I want to learn more about it, and saying something that I'm like, in my head, I'm like, God, what you said was horrible. But, like, kind of making that choice, like you said, of, do I want to take the time right now to say, well, actually, you know, that's a little bit weird yeah, to say.
And not usually, because usually I'm in the throes of nakedness with this person, or I'm like, maybe if I chew them out right now, maybe they won't fuck me again, and the sex is really good. And so there's right, many, yeah, reasons why I don't confront. And like I said, I have said ableist things about people too in the work I do, and I've said things that I wish I could take back sometimes, and people have had to correct me and be like, Andrew, wait a minute, what about this? And it's a learning experience, and I think we need to be open to, especially in our social justice warrior, like, 2018 mm-hmm. world, we need to be
climate,
open.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to be open to, like, I made a mistake. I'm really sorry about it. Can I get another chance? And I'm not mm-hmm. saying that that's always the easiest thing to grant somebody, but I think when it comes to disability, a lot of disabled people have a right to be angry, very, very angry about a lot of stuff that's happened to them, and I get it, and I'm angry too, but I'm trying to turn that anger into something productive for myself, because I could sit and spend a whole hour with the two of you talking about how every relationship that I've ever had has been a one-night stand and how it sucks and blah, 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 but that doesn't help me, that just spirals it out. So instead of that, I was like, let's create a podcast and talk about, you know, bring all the stuff that I'm annoyed about into a forum where I can talk about it. And I think disabled people have not an obligation, because no one's obligated to, but they have an opportunity to take their experience and show able-bodied people and non-disabled people, who, by the way, will eventually become disabled in one way or another. So get ready, you will become one of us. and when, you know, just sharing that experience with somebody if they want to, and it makes, I think, sex and sexuality much more fun if you're open to kind of living in the fact that you will make a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, that opportunity that you're talking about is just so great, because I think, I don't know, a lot of people tend to be like, no, I'm just going to write you off 100% because you made this mistake and you're therefore a bad person. But it sounds like you really tend to just say, you know, this is a learning opportunity.
I mean, not all the time. There are definitely times where I'm like, fuck you, that was horrible, don't say that again, like, blah, blah, blah. But I'm learning, especially in the end of 2017 to early 2018, that's not getting me anywhere mm-hmm. anymore. That's really, it's exhausting to be mad at people for things they don't understand. I just have to power through and do my own stuff and hope that through my work and through, like, being how hot I am, somebody will eventually, you know, realize that I have stuff to offer, and if they want to give it a shot, here I am.
Yeah. All right, so I have a question for you about the times that you've gone and spoken at places like that. In terms of, like, these sort of 101 things, like you were saying, it's tiring to do them, but you also understand that they're valuable to do. I've been really curious about, like, have there been things that have really surprised you that people even needed to ask at all? Or does it all kind of make sense? Are you like, yeah, okay, I get why you would ask, like, how do you have sex? Or
I did a lecture a couple years ago. I did a university lecture with this girl, and she's in the front row, and she's asking, I said, okay, time to ask whatever you want about the lecture we just had. And she goes, she looks me dead in the eye after an hour and a half lecture and goes, so wait, you actually have sex?
What the fuck?
And I looked at her, and I had to be professional, right? I had to, like, take a breath. Yeah, actually, I do. And inside, I was like, wait, didn't you just pay attention?
Where have you been?
Where were you now for 90 minutes to where I just did all this? So, like, when people, I think, when I, especially when I'm lecturing to classrooms, I feel like sometimes they're mandated to be there by their class, so they don't, they're not paying attention. So I always feel like, and sometimes
they're on their phone or something.
And sometimes I get frustrated because it's like, usually it's able-bodied people that I'm lecturing to about the, like, the 101 of disability. And I'd love to do a class or a lecture where it's all other disabled people who we, instead of me lecturing for 90 minutes with, like, my PowerPoints about how great my dick is and how you should all fuck a disabled guy and how great it is, because I do have those. But, you know, other than doing that, I wish I could do a series where me and a bunch of disabled people are just sitting in a room talking about sex. Like, that would be an amazing lecture series, because that doesn't happen very often. Usually, I am lecturing to non-disabled, cisgendered, white people who don't, who have never had any experience with disability, or if they do, they're in the room and they're too shy to tell me, and they'll come up afterwards and be like, actually, I'm dealing with this, like, thank you for your lecture, and they'll be all shy about it, and I'll be like, why didn't, I wish you felt safe enough to have a space where you could say, like, I have this disability, and I want to talk about sexuality this way. And I did have somebody in a lecture in the States in Illinois a couple years ago stop me midway through my lecture and say, well, what are you doing for people with cognitive disabilities and impairments? And I had to stop and go, I literally said, I'm not doing anything right now, but thank you for letting me know because I have to figure it out. I also feel uncomfortable doing stuff like that where I am not somebody with a cognitive disability, so I don't feel like I have a right to speak on that. And it's stuff that I want to do for Disability After Dark. I want to talk to people with intellectual disabilities about consent and stuff like that, but I want to bring them on the show to talk to me. I don't have a right to pretend like I know what I'm talking about when I don't, and I think that's my privilege. So, like I said earlier, a lot of the show is me putting out calls to guests saying, hey, do you want to tell me your story? Because I don't want to speak for you. I want you to come and share. I want to use the podcast as a platform, not just for me to get my stuff out, but also to be like, come and feel safe to tell your story about sexuality, whatever it is, as a disabled person.
Hey, Drew Scott here. And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMail.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store, and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's multi, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
You've been saying recently on your podcast, too, that you are like actively looking for suggestions of topics
as
well.
All the time.
That's So to our listeners out there, if you're hearing this and going, oh my God, yes, like this, I feel like he could talk about something that relates to me or something I wanted to know about, you know who to talk to. Go talk to Andrew about
totally.
It. Tell him what you want to cover. Yeah. I mean, that's similarly, you know, that's why we're excited to have you on this show, because this is obviously something that neither of us can speak about right now. I was curious about, we talked about this a little bit before the show, but like, are you polyamorous, non-monogamous? Like, what kind of relationships do you have?
It's a loaded, deep question, because usually my relationships start and end with, thank you for the one night stand, it was good, thanks for hanging out, see you later, bye. So my I've never been in a long-term, monogamish, any kind of relationship. I've never dated for more than one or two dates. It's never been something that's been long term, but I would say I'm non-monogamous. I'm non-monogamous. I don't, and I think that is partially because of disability. I think for me, it's attributed to disability because everybody thinks that as a disabled person, you should find one person to love you, and you should find one person to marry you, and you should find one person who. I get a lot of the time people saying to me like, don't you want to just find the one? Don't you want to find somebody to look past your disability and like see you for who you really are? And I'm always like, ew, no, if that's what being in a relationship with one person is, I never want that. Because I want somebody who can call me a cripple and we can laugh about it later. Like, that's what I want. That's like, but I also feel because I'm disabled, I have been denied opportunities to just kind of be slutty and try things and just be. So the idea of monogamy of like, oh, I can be with multiple people and try things, like that's a cool idea. But again, for me, it lies in the realm of ideology because most people don't want to date somebody with a disability because they're afraid of all those things. And also so many places where, in my case as a disabled queer guy, so many places are not accessible, like so many bars I can't get into. So the places where I would go to be like, hey, I think you're really cute, let's like go back to my place and fuck or get to know each other or whatever it is, I can't access those. So my place of like sex is online, which is very fickle and very, you know, people don't, if they don't like you, they swipe right and you're done, or they swipe left and you're done. And so like it, the idea of being, I've only had the idea of being in a relationship. I've never gotten to try that. And I'm like, I'm almost 34. So saying that feels weird now, but I'm also getting to a place where being single and disabled, I'm kind of okay with it now. Like I'm reaching a point where I'm like, I don't need, I mean, it would be nice. And if it happens, great, but I'm not going to put all my eggs in one basket and hope that this fairy tale romance. I think a lot of, this is turning into a way longer answer than I expected it to. I think a lot of disabled people are also fed a really ableist idea of like, you have to find the one person, you have to find like your true love. Like we're fed fairy tales because there is no fairy tale right now for kids that's like the disabled guy or the disabled person in a wheelchair who isn't seeing anybody or who can't have a relationship because of XYZ. There's none of that. So you just keep being fed old ideas. And then when you're a younger person, like when I was a teenager, you see all your cis hetero friends being like, hey, so I have a girlfriend now and it's a big deal. And so like I played with that idea, but inside I was like, wait, I'm queer and I want to sleep with everyone. What do I do about that? And so like I'm 34, still having those feelings of like teenagehood because my sexuality has been so denied, which is part of why I started doing this work, because I wanted to get my dick sucked on occasion. Like, that's really why I became a disability awareness consultant talking about sex, because I was like, I'm horny all the time. I need an outlet to get it out. Why don't I turn it into my job?
One of the things that jumped out to me in what you were just saying was that idea of finding the one who's going to see past your disability. And that you were kind of like, hey, but actually, like, that's part of who I am. That's not something you just kind of ignore. That's not like, that's kind of the fairy tale we're sold, yep. I guess. And I think there's a lot of fairy tales that all of us are sold about the one, and which, you know, we're not going to go into all that. I want to keep this a little bit specific here. But something that really jumped out to me with that was in an episode that you did about like gym culture and working out and disability, and how, like, I was kind of shocked to hear this, but how many people had said to you things like, oh man, you just gotta like get into the gym more and then you can get out of that wheelchair, or like you'll get past this, or you'll like overcome that, I guess, as if it were just sort of like any old struggle that anyone has, rather than being, you know, a part of who you are, that clearly you've like made that part of your identity.
I get it. I got it on the dance floor once. I got it on an app once. I get it on apps all the time. Like, hey, do you want to go to the gym? And I'm just like, no, you can. And like, I'll look at your muscles and that's cool. But like, do I want to like work out with you? No. But like I said in that episode, if you want to swim and like get me,
right. If you want to hold me while I'm in the water.
Yeah. Like if you want to feed into my like gay porn fantasy, sure. I'm all about that. But I mean, the idea that health and ability is linked to sex, especially in queer male culture, is kind of gross. Yeah. It's really overdrawn. And then I come in and be like, hey, I don't want to like work out that way. And like, I talked in that episode also about like the positions that people use to like have better sex are linked to exercise and linked to like muscle tone and all that stuff. And so it's like, no, what if that doesn't work? Like, what if that doesn't work for you? And so I think gym culture could be really fun if we said to disabled people, like, hey, come to this disabled gym class and maybe we'll do this exercise so you can thrust better, or maybe we'll do this exercise so you can like in with your disability do this better or this better, or like, and remove it from I'm gonna cure your disability if you do cardio,
yeah,
to I'm gonna make sex feel better for you as a disabled person if we worked on this together.
Well, hey, I think you just figured out your next career move is start teaching that class. Right.
Yeah, right?
That's brilliant. That would also probably be a good way to get some more dates.
Yeah, right. Exactly, yes.
You're the sexy trainer teaching the exercise class.
I'm down for that. I'm down for that, for sure.
Cool. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time here. One of our Patreon supporters was also a guest on your show, Kelly Bracken, who was on, I forget which episode, like 43 or something like that.
Episode
it was a little while
49-ish?
Ago. 49? Something like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
But she was on your show too, so it was like, oh, cool, look at all this overlap between these podcasts. So I'm really excited that we finally got to have you on. I would definitely recommend listening to Andrew's podcast. Andrew, can you tell our listeners like where they can find out more about all the stuff that you do?
So many places. First, www.andrewgerza.com. Secondly, Andrew Gerza on Twitter. You can follow the podcast at DisAftDarkPod on Twitter as well. On Facebook, Disability After Dark is the podcast, and Andrew Gerza 1 is my stuff. Support Cripple content, and anybody who creates content needs to be supported, because, you know, creating stuff like this is super hard. So if you want to support my show, patreon.com/disabilityafterdark. I don't have, what sucks about it is I don't have any cool like merch yet, because also merch is expensive and getting it shipped is expensive and like making it's expensive. I was going to do buttons and I was like, whoa, no, the cost of buttons are like, no. So right now it's just like a nice shout out, and I'm trying to find ways to do stuff that won't cost me. But patreon.com/disabilityafterdark, like, and yeah, those are all the places.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah. And if you're already a patron of ours and want to support more creators getting content out there, that there isn't a lot of other stuff like it, Andrew's a great person to support for that.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thanks. All right. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Andrew. That was an amazing, amazing interview. I learned a ton. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you learned a ton, Jace.
Definitely.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll get to talk to Andrew again at some point and see how he's doing, see how the podcast is doing at another time on this show. So with that, if you would like to have your question or comment played on the show, then you can call 678-MULTI-05. I don't know what that was.
And then like wah wah wah, and then it's like the dubstep remix. Yeah.
And leave us a voicemail, or you can send us an audio message at the Multiamory Facebook page. You can also email us at info@multiamory.com or send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. To support our show and join our private Facebook community, go to patreon.com/multiamory. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Dedeker Winston, and me, Emily Matlack. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on the episodes page on multiamory.com.